Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Leaps and Bounds podcast. I am your host, Heath Thorpe, and here we discuss all things life, gymnastics, queer, and whatever we want. Hello, beautiful people. It's really nice to be talking to you again. I apologize for the break between episodes, but I need to take a little bit of a step back for myself and my well-being. I'm totally okay now, so there's no need to stress, but I was just struggling with quite a bit of anxiety around gymnastics, and I just didn't have the capacity to be working on this podcast at the time. But we're back with this episode with Jackson Harrison, who is a fab non-binary gymnast at Arizona State University. They have beautiful floor choreography and tumbling and leaps, and it's divine. So if you haven't watched them do their gymnastics, please go and look. But before we get into that, I just thought I would catch everyone up on where I'm at mentally and just kind of be a bit candid, because that was the point of this podcast. So I want to stay true to that honor and be real with you all. Olympic year, no one really tells you how to deal with this shit. I think the excitement originally about making the Olympics was the ultimate driver, and that possibility was pushing me and guiding me and, you know, making me go into the gym every day and work my ass off. That's still there, but I think the fear of not making the Olympics has somewhat hijacked the excitement of making the Olympics. And I just went into this like month spiral. I was super self-critical in the gym. I was just always, nothing's good enough and I'm not good enough. And I was really struggling with self-confidence and self-belief. So that has been really hard. I've worked on it quite a bit and spoken to the people I need to speak to. So I think I'm in a much better place. I'm actually at DTB Procol Cup this weekend in Stuttgart. So that'll be my first all-around competition in 9 months since like nationals last year. So it's been a long time since I've been out there. And I think this deadline had put a lot of anxiety on me as well, because I was very comfortable with my progression looking towards Oceania in the end of May. And as this competition approached, I started getting in my head about needing to prove a point to everyone in the world, to my federation, to just kind of justify the ordeal that was Worlds. And I think that's something I still haven't fully processed. So that's been rearing its head a little bit. But yeah, I just had to kind of bring it back to why I do gymnastics. I was literally on the phone to my mom last week, and I like rang her and I was just like, hey, I can't do this. Like, I'm not competing this weekend. I don't know how I'm going to go about it, but I'm not going to compete in Germany. I don't want to do high level gymnastics anymore. And I don't want this pressure. I don't want this anxiety. You know, I'm losing sleep and I'm just not in the right headspace, because what if I don't do well? What if this happens? What if that happens? And it was basically kind of like my little meltdown breaking point. And I think I just had a moment of realization following that. I realized I was on the other side of the world and I'm doing what I love. And little me would be so proud of what I do. I know all of you guys are proud of what I do. And I just had to minimize, I guess, the weight I'm giving the Olympics and bring it back to the fact that my gymnastics doesn't revolve around it. And I've spoken about it a lot. So it was hypocritical of me to then tell myself that the only thing that matters was making the Olympics and my self-worth was dependent on that. So yeah, anyway, I haven't fully worked through it, but I'm getting there and I'm in a much better headspace going into this weekend. I'm not really 100% ready, but it's March and that's what I keep reminding myself. I still have some upgrades. I think my quality work is there. We might have a few falls, we might not, but I'm just going to try and enjoy the competition. And I think being back in the environment in the training gyms has really helped. It's been really, really nice to feel the support from the other athletes and to have everyone appreciate and acknowledge the work I've put in, I think has helped me realize that my gymnastics legacy transcends my results. So yeah, anyway, there's a little bit of my brain and how it's been functioning. So I hope that isn't too much. But in short, I'm good. I'm back. I feel much better. And I'm just trying to keep the bigger picture in mind. And I'm still going full steam ahead to Paris, but I'm just going to have to tweak how I'm approaching it because previously it wasn't sustainable. So back to happy gymnastics we go, and back to carefree and fun gymnastics we go. Anyway, no more talking. I'm going to play the episode. It was a really fab conversation with Jackson. We spoke a lot about our experiences in gymnastics and also their experience as being the first non-binary athlete to compete at the US Championships in MAG, which is really interesting. And we spoke a lot about allyship and also brought the conversation to the new direction of MAG and WAG and where we think it should go and what we see happening. So yeah, pour yourself a cup of tea, have a coffee, start your drive to work and enjoy this episode. Thanks as always for all the support, and I will talk to you all very soon. All right, enjoy. Alrighty, well, welcome to Leaps and Bounds. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I've been following your gymnastics journey for quite a while, and I'm like a big fan of your gymnastics style. I think it's like pretty cool having a few different queer gymnasts across the world with a similar gymnastic style and kind of just doing our own little thing. So thanks for being authentic and being yourself. It's wonderful to see.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've been watching you for probably longer than you've been watching me. So it's just, it's really cool, like you said, to have all of us doing a bunch of different types of gymnastics. And I just love to see it.
For sure. So we're briefly chatting. You are in your competition season already. Do you want to give everyone a little bit of a rundown of like your gymnastics journey, where you started out and kind of where you're at now, and also the plans for the future, if you have them?
Yeah, totally. So listening to your first episode of this podcast, you kind of grew up like in kind of the middle of nowhere. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I kind of have a similar thing. Like I grew up in Southern Rhode Island. There's nothing around. My high school and middle school is surrounded by a bunch of farms. And there wasn't really anyone like me growing up. And then my brother started doing football because he did all like the ball sports. He did like baseball, basketball. He did football for a little bit. And I would have to go and watch him practice, and the cheerleaders would practice at the same time. And so after they would finish, I would go out onto the field and I would try to copy what they were doing. So that's kind of how my parents were like, oh, maybe we should put them in gymnastics because this is probably not very safe out here on the grass. So I started doing gymnastics, and then I would think I was like 7 or 8. And then I started competing when I was like 9. And I competed for a gym in Rhode Island, Aim High Academy, for my entire club career. And I'm super thankful that I had a really amazing two coaches and some supportive teammates the whole time I was there. So that was really cool. And then going into like high school and kind of thinking about recruiting for college, I was really focused on trying my best to make it to a Division I school. And then my junior year of high school, I tore my Achilles right before competition season. So it took me out, and I kind of didn't have that opportunity to like go out there and show what I was working on before colleges started offering visits and all of this kind of stuff. So I didn't really get recruited at all. I was reaching out to almost all of the coaches, and they were all like, yeah, we're kind of full. We have all of our guys for the upcoming season. I was like, cool, great. But thankfully we have like the GymX program, where we have a bunch of teams that aren't funded by schools anymore. And Arizona State was my backup school. It was my last choice. I was really doing everything I could to not come here. And then when I did finally get here, I couldn't have been more excited. I actually was planning on trying to transfer out after my freshman year. And then I got here and the team was just, it was just so great. And I don't know. There was just something about it. And I was like, yeah, I definitely want to stay. And my freshman year was a bit of a struggle. I think freshman year for anyone is a struggle. So, you know, been pushing, and now I'm senior captain on the team. And here we are.
Okay, fab. Well, thanks for the little rundown. It's interesting that we both kind of grew up in little rural settings. I think it's a very unique experience growing up queer in those settings, just because you don't really have that, I don't know, that relatability to other people in your town. I think it can be quite isolating, but I'm glad, and I think even more proud of you then for kind of overcoming that as well, because it is a barrier that people don't realize, and it's kind of one that you do have to work through when realizing your identity, which like kind of leads me to the next little topic. So for those listening that don't know, Jackson identifies with they/them pronouns, and you were the first non-binary, at least MAG athlete at the US Championships last year to ever compete, which is pretty amazing. Do you want to give a little recap, I guess, of that, separate to gymnastics, that realization of your identity and how you came to kind of come out and live authentically? And then we'll get into how that was intersectional with gymnastics. But firstly, when did you first realize or at least have a way to express it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was always that kid, like, playing dress up, wearing dresses, like, as young as I was. And even I had an uncle who was gay, and my mom tells a story of, like, I was, like, 1 year old running around in a dress, and he leaned over to my mother and he was like, "You're doing such a great job." And she just loved to tell that story. But I was always, like, there was never a closet, essentially. Like, there was never, like, I didn't really come out. I was just kind of like, oh, that's just how I am. And so I, like, guess I started coming out, like, telling people and being open about not being straight when I was like 12 or 13. And then when I got to college, I remember this one day, my freshman year, we were standing in lineup and my coach is like, "Blah, blah, 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 be a man." And all of a sudden I was like, "Me? Not me. I'm not being a man." And it kind of like made all the dots connect of like, growing up when we had to wear a tie for my parents' wedding, I was like, "Oh, I don't want to do that." And when they were like, "All right, in gym class, boys over here, girls over here," it was like, "Ooh, I don't, there's no place for me." It kind of made all of those things connect of like, oh, that's because idea of gender as a whole doesn't resonate with me really at all. I kind of have found the less I work through the concept of gender, the better I feel, like the better things feel, whether that's gymnastics or any part of my life. I just don't exist with gender. It's not something in my brain that even exists. So that's kind of why I like the term non-binary. I know there's a bunch of different terms that kind of all have similar meanings. But for me, non-binary, it's kind of like there is no binary. There's nothing. It doesn't exist. It's not real. We made it up, essentially. So that's kind of where I like that term. And for me, with like terms and stuff, I don't have a huge deal with a lot of words. Like, I mean, I'm surrounded by 50 guys all day for 6 days of the week. So it's like, I kind of can't be picky, but the one thing I do get a stickler on is the pronouns. I don't associate with he, him pronouns. I just do they, them. So I am always telling my teammates they, and they're always like, "Oh, sorry."
I assume if your teammates ever do, I guess, misgender use those pronouns, it is not with ill intent, but it's still obviously, I think, exhausting to have to always correct people. And I think also a lot of people, as I just said, you were the first non-binary person to compete at the US Championship. So I think it's somewhat of a common experience for people to not know many non-binary folk in real life outside of online. Yeah. And I think that also kind of brings down a barrier once you meet people who identify as non-binary. I think once you understand the basis of it and how simple it is and really understand that it's a part of their identity, but it's not like the biggest thing. It's just, you see them as a person. I think that makes the biggest difference. But
totally, yeah.
Kind of like along those lines, I think it's already, I think, complicated and nuanced enough coming to terms with any identity that's outside of what we consider the norm. But what were those added barriers within gymnastics? And like, I've spoken pretty candidly about my experiences as a gay cis man. And I often say this, like, I think I had pretty bad experiences when I was younger. And that was as someone who didn't really challenge a whole lot of norms outside of my sexuality. So that was already a challenging experience. So then to kind of bring a whole new ideology, concept, whatever people would call it, to the gymnastics world, how did you find that? And how has that been, I guess, even outside of your team, but just within the greater gymnastics community?
I think it's like what you said, a lot of when I was younger, like the way coaches talk to you and the way your teammates talk to you in like your younger years is really formative of like how you see yourself growing up. And my gym, my coaches and my teammates were very supportive of me when I started being like when I started painting my nails and wearing makeup, they were very supportive of me. But it was always like, don't salute like a girl. I would always like to do, you know, like you stand on the line, do a little side aerial. Don't do that. It was always just stuff like that of like, don't do girls gymnastics because we're men. And that was the big thing for me. So kind of when I came to college and people started really not caring what you were doing, it was like, oh my God, I'm going to sneak a little side aerial in right now because nobody's looking. But then it's just like, nobody cares. So I think for me, that was the biggest thing because I was blessed to have supportive parents and teammates and friends. And that's something I'll never take for granted because I know not everyone has that. But it's just those little things of like, because in my head, there is no, like, gender isn't anything, it doesn't exist. So all of those things were kind of forced into me to learn of like, this is how you salute, this is how you act at a meet, this is how you present yourself as like this staple man character of like being tough and strong. And then once I got to college and I finally started to like relax that, and I call it doing gymnastics like a girl because that's what I want to do. It was, it kind of like changed everything, and gymnastics became easier and more enjoyable. And I don't know, it just like got better. And when I started doing my girl salute, that I think that's the most like prominent thing that I do that people are like, whoa.
Yeah. So I guess you attribute that comfortability in your identity to the college environment, I'd say, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I just feel like in college, like we're all a team, we're all doing the same goal, but we're all a little bit older and there's so many more of us. So it's like, you can't really police what people are doing as much as what happens in club. And people just, they didn't care. I was getting good scores. So it's like, why are my coaches going to be mad that I'm presenting like a girl when I'm winning meets on floor and doing a really good vault? It's like, they don't care. They just want me to do a good routine and that's what I'm doing. So I think that's what matters. It's like, it's almost like that thing of like, oh, you're gay. Who cares? Do a routine. Like,
you're definitely a attribute to ASU. I love your Chenko double. And speaking of your floor routine as well, so you've been doing a lot of leaps. You've been exploring a lot within artistry. And interestingly enough, we had a survey sent to us today by FIG, and they're kind of doing a rebranding process by the looks of it. And one of the questions we got was, it was something along the lines of like, how important is the word artistic in men's artistic gymnastics? Which kind of made me think that potentially a part of the rebranding process might be them stepping away from artistry altogether, since it is essentially non-existent. But from your perspective, what benefits does artistry have within gymnastics and within men's gymnastics, and why shouldn't, I guess, FIG or any governing body step away from the idea of it? What would be your pitch to them to kind of continue encouraging it, or at least start continue encouraging it?
Yeah, I think the gymnastics that we do, it's a performance at the end of the day. And I know for me, putting on a performance when I am competing makes everything easier. And then I'm kind of thinking about our coach. He is a little bit old fashioned, so he loves to talk about how they used to have the risk, originality and virtuosity kind of component to the score. And I feel like that's kind of something that needs to be brought back of like, if you're going to do something, do it with a little extra flair, whether that, you know, I'm thinking of like Danelle Leyva's like high bar routine from 2012 of how he like throws his arms out to the side. We always hear Tim Daggett yell about. And for me, it's like that part of it of like, you're doing the skill, but then you're doing it in a way that makes even people who have seen everyone and their mother do that skill 100 times go, oh, wow, look at that. I feel like that's for me, like the flair of it all. That's the artistry that we're kind of missing right now when you're trying to pack in 10 difficult skills into a 70-second floor routine. That's where I would go for the FIG. For me, I'm a performer. I love the attention. I want to be the center of attention everywhere I go. So that's kind of where I come from of like, I know that my gymnastics is going to draw attention. One, because I am 6 feet tall. Two, because I look like this. And three, because I'm doing skills that are difficult, that are really challenging. So that's where I kind of derive from of like, having that center of attention, having that performance aspect of the sport. I love to perform at the end of the day. And that's kind of where my love for competing comes to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's definitely an area that I believe FIG and other governing bodies need to focus on, because as we're seeing, like, men's gymnastics, I don't want to use the word dying, but at least within the US, for example, we've seen all the budget cuts from the NCAA mm-hmm. programs. And I think even just like viewership and seeing, when I was at Worlds like this year as a journalist, just seeing the crowds like empty for men's gymnastics.
Yeah.
There's obviously something missing. And I think the most obvious contrast to women's gymnastics is the performance aspect. I think it's just like, I've mentioned it from like a social media standpoint, but even an in-person event standpoint, the general audience and the untrained eye can't tell the amount of twists. They can't tell how many saltos you're doing. They don't know difficulties. What needs to be established is a space for personability and uniqueness. And I don't necessarily think that comes from doing a leap, but I think we should look at going back to virtuosity bonuses and unique bonuses and kind of encouraging athletes to have autonomy over how they would get those points. But there definitely needs to be something instilled there, because at the rate it's going, it's like it floors power tumbling. And I think when you have the best gymnasts in the world, they're all capable of the hardest skills. But like, what is making it interesting to watch when you're watching, especially a whole subdivision of, you know, hundreds of routines, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's the point you made. It's a performance capability, at least, not necessarily requirement, but maybe, just maybe, if they allocate the space there for it, people will use that. But yeah, it was just an interesting email I got before we had this interview, and I was like, huh. I obviously, like, it was like a scale of 1 to 10, how important you thought the word autistic was, and I was considering putting a 0 because I'm like, it's not relevant at this point, but it needs to be relevant. So I'm like, all right, we'll chop it up to a 10. But I think your gymnastics, my gymnastics, Ruben Schitter's gymnastics, mm-hmm. Sam Phil, like people mm-hmm. around the world and queer athletes around the world that have unique skills, leaps, something different, other ones drawing the engagement on social media. It's what people are seeing and it's what they're interested in. Whether it's like seen as controversial to people watching, it's still drawing attention. And it's kind of like the idea, like any press is good press. There's no such thing as bad press. Gymnastics needs to find a way to increase viewership.
It needs something right now, because
like something,
we've got nothing.
We really do have nothing. It's quite shocking. But I guess the rigidity, is that a word? Rigidity. Rigidness.
Sure.
Anyway,
everyone
knows what I'm trying to say. I've spoken about it a lot, but it obviously comes from gender norms and the ways that our different gym sports have been set up. You know, it's upholding the idea of masculinity versus femininity in women's gymnastics. And obviously that comes with a lot of problematic consequences. I think even more so towards queer folk within the sport. It's kind of why we have such a lack of representation. But I think as someone who is non-binary, what do you think is the biggest barrier for people that don't fit within the gender norms? Do you think it is the fact that MAG and WAG are so strict on how many apparatus and what we can do and the code of points? Do you think it's the rules that are potentially creating more of a hostile environment for queer folk?
Yeah, I definitely think it has almost everything to do with the rules. And how you mentioned the gender norms, that's something I study a lot in school, and I've actually tried to bring gymnastics into it as much as I can, as we see like this juxtaposition of like men's gymnastics is hyper masculine, women's gymnastics is hyper feminine. And it's kind of men's gymnastics' job to stay as much away from women's gymnastics as it can. I don't know about you, but I feel like a lot of the guys on my team are resistant to like watch women's gymnastics, enjoy it, like talk about it, because one, it's so much more popular than than men's gymnastics. And two, it's the exact opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. And I think that juxtaposition is what makes it so hard for people who are in the middle of the gender spectrum to find a place in the sport. Because like for me, I grew up doing men's gymnastics. And then when I realized I was non-binary, it was like almost too late for me to like switch to women's gymnastics. And I'm not a woman. So it's like, that wouldn't make sense for me to do women's gymnastics, because I'm not a woman. I don't have the body of a woman. I don't have, like, that's not who I am. So it's like, I have to kind of stick with what I'm doing and find ways around the rules to like make the gymnastics that I'm doing fit into the men's gymnastics code of points. And the sport, like men's gymnastics and women's gymnastics, are essentially completely different sports. The only thing we have in common is vault at the end of the day. Even floor is like not even close to the same thing. So I think if you're looking at sports like track and field or swimming, where they're essentially the same sport, give or take a couple meters or so, or even like baseball versus softball, basketball is essentially the same sport, men's and women's. Ours is just, it's so different. And I think that kind of loses a bunch of people who are in the middle, where it's like, I can't do men's gymnastics, I can't do women's gymnastics, so there's nothing else for me to do. And then I guess we have like TNT or acro, but those are all, again, those are different sports. So it's like, if you want to do artistic gymnastics, there's just nowhere for you to go at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think as well, a lot of people don't realize, like, this conversation goes beyond gender identity as well. It falls into expression and gender expression, but I guess just like personal expression. And I think this is apparent for all areas of life, but like, when we're talking about like queer liberation and we're talking about, you know, I guess kind of deconstructing a lot of norms, what a lot of people don't realize is it benefits everyone essentially. All of us are subject and kind of victim to a lot of gender norms in society. Like cis men, for example, and straight men, we talk about suicide rates and we talk about masculinity and how, you know, men's mental health skyrockets and there's often more catastrophic outcomes because they don't have ways to talk. Like, that is a consequence and a direct response to a gender norm in society. These conversations aren't exclusive to queer folk. And I think a lot of people get hesitant at that because they feel excluded from it and they feel it doesn't involve them and it's a world away from them. But any deconstruction of the norms we have in place are going to be beneficial to you and me and everyone.
Yeah.
I like, it's not even like a necessary, we need to completely change what men's and women's gymnastics looks like. I think baby steps and small wins are kind of the way forward. And I think, like, for myself, for example, I don't necessarily, like, I don't feel the need for the apparatus to merge, or I don't feel like I need to be competing beam. Like, it's fun to play with. I'm comfortable within the apparatus assigned to Mag, but it's the things that were really hard were just not having that autonomy and self-authority to choose the skills I wanted because of the rules in place. And I think that was really damaging, at least to myself growing up, and I'm sure as same as kind of you mentioned too.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
And I guess kind of going on from that as well, you mentioned your teammates. You know, I'm similar. All my teammates are essentially straight, they're cis. Like, it's it's a very cis male dominated space, straight space. Allyship. I've made some of my best friends in gymnastics because they are the biggest allies, and it's been quite nice to have them alongside throughout my journey. What would kind of be your notes or your points on allyship, and also some like tips for people potentially, you know, wanting to be more inclusive in their gymnastics clubs and teams? What do you think is a good place to start, or some advice you'd be able to give them?
I think the best thing any ally can do is just listen. When you're involved with someone who is a gender nonconforming person, or they're queer or anything, I think you can just listen to them and try to understand where they're coming from. And when I say, oh, my pronouns are they, them, my teammates listen. And I know that most of them have always tried their best to get it right. Even if they make a mistake, when I say, hey, they're like, oh, sorry, every time. And I think that the least people could do at this point, like, that's kind of the bare minimum. And then obviously when a queer person or myself is going through something hard or going through something challenging, or someone is disrespecting us in any way, just like, not even standing up for me, because I can stand up for myself, but like standing with me as I stand up. And I've had some negative experiences with certain people before, and I've had teammates that have been right by my side and being like standing right behind me as I spoke up for myself. And that has just meant the world to me. And that had a really big impact on how I saw my team and how I saw myself. And I think that's just the biggest thing, of making sure that you're listening to them when they're talking about their experiences, and you're trying your best to understand. And even if you don't understand, that's just fine. you don't have to understand anything. You just have to accept that as their truth and just move forward with them and be behind them when they need you to be there.
Yeah, for sure. I think that is the biggest thing. I think that's where my best allies have come from, when it's those people who are just willing to sit and listen and reflect. They don't need to like understand my lived experience, but empathizing with it at least and doing their best to kind of further educate themselves is always important. I said it in an interview with like Olympics sometime last year. I think at kind of times like this, and also the issues we talk about aren't exclusive to gymnastics. Like, these are issues that queer people are facing everywhere. It's just kind of like under our microglass that like we are looking at it because it's our space that we function in.
Yeah.
But I think at times like this where, like, you know, we're seeing a lot of queer rights go backwards, especially trans rights, you know, seeing bans on trans people in sport, and not even to get into the conversation around it, but it's like a lot of what people are talking of is like hype. The issue I have is it's always the hypotheticals of trans people. It's not the reality of trans people.
Yes.
It's always what if, you know, what then, this, that. And it's like the reality is that's never happened and it's likely not going to happen. What we need to do is protect trans and queer people and, you know, the whole spectrum's realities and accustomed to that, what is happening now. And to circle back, I feel like almost we have enough, not enough, sorry, I can't say enough, but we have more representation than we previously did. But I feel as if we still don't have any more visible allyship. And I think on the same level where we're putting expectations on queer athletes to kind of be that light and represent and guide. But I think it's the time where allies need to step up and show that it's a space welcoming to us, because it's all good for us to exist and be vocal and visible. But if it's a space that we don't know if we're going to be comfortable in, then it makes it a lot harder. So I think it's just like my point onto yours is listening, but, you know, also advocating and standing up, as you mentioned. I think that allyship is just as important as representation these days.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I want to do this for myself, but I also want to do it for the next generation. But how are they going to know that what I'm doing is safe and something possible if the other people aren't speaking out for me too? And to do it like, to do it where I recognize that my teammates are supportive is good. But at the end of the day, I feel like exactly what you said, people need to be speaking out publicly too, whether you're an ally or whether you're a part of the community, because that's what's going to make the big difference. And then people know that, like, oh, it's okay to be supportive of queer people, you know?
So I guess kind of to wrap it up a little bit, I think one of my final questions would be, I often ask myself what I'd want gymnastics to look like when I walk away and I'm kind of done. But for yourself, let's say in 20 years, I think we need some time. Like, what do you want to look at gymnastics and see? What would you be content with?
Oh gosh, 20 years.
It's a loaded question.
It's a long time away too. I don't know. This is something that I try not to think about, but I suppose I just want there to be more gays, more queers. We need more of them. I think we need more of them at a higher level. And whether the rules change or not, I really don't think I personally have a lot of control over that. But as long as we get those queers up there competing at the highest levels, whether that's college or elite or the Olympics or wherever, that would just be good enough for me at the end of the day. And you said before that you don't really need the events or the rules to merge anymore. And that's kind of how I feel too. I feel like these are the sports that have been created, and not that tradition is always the best way to go about things, but I think we don't need to change them to a point where they're different sports. I think we just need to make adjustments to them so that they're welcoming to all, to everyone. Everyone needs a place within sports, because sports is a part of our world, whether we like it or not. It's such a huge part of the society that we live in. And I think everyone deserves a space within the sport that they want to do. So I think if we can just figure out how to make it a little bit less straight and masculine and rigid and all that, then I think we've done a good job. So That's kind of my broad answer.
No, I absolutely agree. You and I discuss it on the elite level, like the 1%. And I think we're also more aware of the reality of how much it would have to change to, you know, I just don't see apparatus merging or gym sports merging realistic on the Olympic level.
No.
And, you know, I think that's okay as it is, but I think there's also so much that can be done on the recreational level and on the club level. And, you know I see in the US there's like, what's it called? It's when they do like, they compete in like different mag and wag apparatus. It's like a national event.
Oh, the decathlon, NAIGC. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they do all 10.
Mm-hmm.
People are always like, you should do it. And
yeah,
I would love to compete the women's events, but I do not do pommel horse anymore. That is my one thing. It's not even the women's events. No more pommels for me. No more rings.
No, literally.
So sorry, y'all.
I got asked to come over and do it this year, and I can't because it's going to be Olympic qualification, but I'm hoping maybe next year. But my point is, there's plenty of like community efforts and actions that can be taken to have less restriction. Like, it doesn't matter if a cis man wants to hop up and do beam on a community level. Like, that's the fun of it. And I think we're so hyper-fixated on elite sport and what could happen in that space that we need to actually take a step back and be like, one, the reality for everyone, but also the reality for queer kids and queer youth is that they just need access to community level sport. The statistics show that, you know, it's drastically reduces mental health and risk of suicide and all these things when they find that community and space. To summarize, it's elite's a whole different conversation, but within community sport, I think there's more that gymnastics organizations can be doing to make it more inclusive and I guess free, because that autonomy is really important for young kids to do what they want. Cause I would have 100% been playing with beam on a community level when I was younger.
Yeah.
I would have loved that. I would have loved that.
Yeah. And even like, we forget that sports are supposed to be fun. Like, not everyone's doing it to win. Some people are just like doing it to have fun. And like, I wish I could be that person, but unfortunately I am just so competitive that I can't just have fun sometimes. But like, if you're just doing it to have fun, do whatever you want. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you don't want to do pommel horse, don't do it.
I'm hoping to be done with it after Paris qualifications or Paris, and I can dust my hands with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's a good thing to wrap up on. If you never want to do pommel, don't ever do pommel. That's our message.
That's it. If you take one thing from this, if you don't want to do pommel horse, get away. Stay as far away as you can.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk. And also just like, thank you for being a shining light of representation and authenticity within the sport. It's, you know, it's really beautiful to see. And I know it's not an easy feat and thing to do. So you're doing an incredible job, and keep it up for all those little queer kiddos coming through.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for doing the same thing. I mean, it would be 10 times harder for me to do what I'm doing if you weren't doing what you're doing. So.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, yeah, on behalf of all the listeners and myself, thanks so much, and we'll talk soon.